The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? The incident between the Anabaptist and Lombardi may have faded in the distance, but the blood-soaked dirt stayed fresh on the minds of the group as they walked toward yet another set of far-flung peaks. In time, they passed a broken-down wagon, the yoke on the mule snapped in half. Matthias would comment that this was an all-too-common tragedy for travelers. To come so far and become helpless in the middle of nowhere, floundering like a Borkan fish out of water. Matthias called out to them, noting that they needed to start moving soon to clear the way for any Helvetic heavy-duty harnesses that patrolled the area and would be escorting bigger supply trains. This was more than just altruism at this point for Matthias, as he knew that scrappers would descend upon them like vultures, ready to gnaw and pick the wagon clean of any salvageable parts, offering rock-bottom prices to lighten the load. Matthias pointed, gestured, and mimed instructions for getting aid from worthy engineers along the path. He reached into his breastplate notch and pulled out the silver coin given to him by the Lombardi. It was blood money, but better spent on something worthwhile as he saw it. He passed it to the frustrated caravan leader, drenched in sweat with two small children playing in the dirt beside him. The man stared down at the coin, not knowing the true value of the silver now in his possession. Matthias closed the man's hand in on itself and pushed it tightly into his sweat-soaked shirt, signifying safekeeping. The man seemed reluctant to take it, but wrangled his children and started backtracking to the nearest patrol a few kilometers behind.
Poor bastard. That's half a year's wage in African silver. I hope I didn't paint a target on his back with that thing.
The low hills ahead framed blackened, firelit sky, illuminating the cloudhead interiors with soft crimson and purple auras. The serene, painterly skyline was but a mirage, a fiction that overshadowed the chaos beneath as thunderhead booms and streaks of lightning echoed through the valleys. The group rallied around a ramshackle shelter and a culvert to make camp for the evening, although a better choice of campsite was certainly in question. The ditch was filled with communal wastewater, and only increased the fetid sting assaulting everyone's nose and eyes, but, Etta surmised, it was at least covered and off the main road. A rosy sunset threw long shadows from the mountain. The cherry twilight even tinged the rising moon with reddened shadow as they rested for the evening. The moon served as some great lidless eye, wreathed in whirls of charcoal cloud, watching over the slumber of the party like some ill portent. Rest was hard to come by, as the shape-shifting tapestry of sky and constant fumes toyed with their minds. Days 17 to 18. The views of the Alps, Mulhouse, and the fortress so far were breathtaking, albeit foreboding, glimpses at the landscapes ahead. None of them compared to the dreadful scope of the Reaper's blow laid out before them, a saturnine wound raking across the surface, festering and scorched. Smoke belched over the landscape, mixing in with the slate clouds above and blanketing the bold area in a permanent smog. The few streaks of light that came through were glowing orange and ochre streaks of magma channels spilling out onto the land. It was as frightening a scene from hell as any blood-soaked battlefield, and awesome to behold. Everything is in motion. Firelight sweeps across the clouds, and the sky is aglow. Past solidified lava rivulets, through knee-high ashen drifts, and across cliffs and chasms, geysers spew steam and boiling water. The earth trembles. Rock shelves break away with a crash as they tilt and splinter and push on top of each other. The soil that once bore golden grain is hard as coal and just as infertile. Puddles of slag boil and emit yellow plumes of smoke. Without breathing protection, lungs will blacken and wheeze. Humans and animals alike are burnt into soot. Nothing can survive here anymore. This is the Reaper's Blow. It's a tectonic phenomenon, starting high in Borka's icy north, then cutting through the Alps in a southward arc to reach Africa's coasts at the bottom of the Mediterranean. Along this line, the ground is torn asunder. Giant sheets of rock the size of small cities form a scar many hundreds of kilometers long. During the Eschaton, rivers were torn from their beds, fallen down across the edges to reappear as geysers elsewhere. Magma chambers bloat right beneath the surface and discharge into volcanoes. In Borka, there is a well-known exclusion zone around the tectonic nightmare. Stay 20 kilometers away, or risk your life. Closer than that distance, and the fumes seep into your lungs, every breath leading to a ragged, burning chest pain. And continued exposure to the vapors will result in rashes and blisters breaking out all over the skin. In the Alpine region, the Reaper's Blow cut through the Helvetic's land, tearing open ravines and belching liquid rock. As hellfire swept through their lands, the Helvetics confronted nature's wrath. They sealed off tunnels, redirected streams of lava, built bridges to lands that were considered lost. They protected themselves with fire-resistant barricades. The Alps may have been broken, but the Helvetics were not. The Reaper's Blow split the Alps like a slash from an unholy axe. The mountains broke open. Stone avalanches splintered from the breaking point, crashing down with a deafening noise, and buried rising magma under millions of tons of stone, a fragile seal on Pandora's box. The Alpine fortress was mortally wounded, as the great access gates caved in or were buried under the rubble. Tunnels that had led into hangars and barracks only yesterday now ended in dizzying heights and opened onto newly formed valleys. Deep, black, toxic columns of smoke curled skyward, searing heat welling up from within. The mountain had become a prison. Complete sections were cut off from the core, the fate of the Swiss living there, unknown. Most of the castaways belonged to the civilian branch and were responsible for the reconstruction. The military fought on, unwilling to give up on comrades and civilians. They had already had to leave behind their relatives. The survivors devised a rescue plan so absurd it could have only been conceived in that time of flamboyant gestures and actions. They wanted to build a bridge across the Reaper's Blow, across Purgatory itself. Men and women worked hard, day by day, only protected from the heat of the magma bubble by a flimsy asbestos suit. They had gone through hell, and what started as a grim joke soon became common parlance. The Helvetics. To the south, off the west coast of Pergare, the Reaper's Blow cuts through the Mediterranean, emitting liquid basalt. This geological anomaly has never been calmed, as the poisonous gas clouds have been wafting across the land since the day Eschaton tore the land asunder, choking out the sunlight and all life along the way. The Mediterranean's foul algae slicks languidly and gurgles against the coast, washing ashore like the charred and wrinkled skin of a decomposing giant. Matthias knew it was time for precautions.
It's gonna get crispy soon. Let's gear up,
Matthias said, as he pulled down his face mask cover. A current ran through his visor lens, activating an advanced imaging system that allowed him to follow the safest path through the thick haze. Eden Sudo stuck close by.
This ambient heat mimics the inside of the mainframe. Raw computing power energy output is nothing compared to this.
Pseudo commented, her rigid mind lapsing in the presence of this awesome scene. Etta tried her own calming mantra to steel her nerves in the vehement cauldron.
Deep breaths. Well, maybe not too deep. Don't let this old patchwork mask fail me now.
She prayed as she donned her mask. The sun's diminished radiance cast a pall over their travel, and even the ground beneath their feet turned to a windswept mound of ash, staining their clothes a deathly gray with its fine powder, and kicking up vortices of dust with each shuffling step. Etta luckily had found a long petrified stick to help steady herself through the slog, so as not to rely on Pseudo's shoulder, barely visible even 2 feet in front of her face. Her compromised mask lens allowed the granular ash to squeeze through the cloth inside, which began irritating her eye. Every few minutes, Etta pushed in her oxygen canister, releasing a small hiss in her muffled cloth and purging the dust from the woven fibers like some unnatural sneeze. The cool, refreshing air that filled her lungs made trudging through the grimy piles a bit more tolerable, but not by much. Even just a breathful helped her think clearer, and she needed it. The ruinous landscape was as depressing and forlorn as the lowest gutters in the Justician Bottomlands to her memory. Not a single green or living thing was growing since they had begun their descent into the volcanic basin. Although misshapen, the Reaper's blow wasn't completely without form. Yawning cracks splintered the footpaths and dust trails separating the tracts of land, but some parallel fissures could be hopped or leapt across, and the widest among them had footbridges spanning the gaps. Chalky cinders and soot coated the bridge's handrails, and as Pseudo steadied herself to cross, a dirty streak of white appeared beneath her hand. She rapped on it with a knuckle, the material giving a firm report from its smooth texture. There were scattered graveyards of caravan parts, burned sundries, and the occasional small animal bones which littered the ground in between bridge crossings. Every step rustled detritus up from the earth's strata, revealing small vignettes about journeymen facing hard decisions to turn back or sacrifice weighty belongings to soldier onward. The widest expansion bridge in the distance beckoned dimly in the haze, its E-torch hazard lights flashing along with the lightning filling the gloomy void. Surrounding molten fire followed the path of least resistance, winding through the terrain like a great, fiery serpent. A fat river of the magma snaked underneath the expansion bridge, sloughing off in great big drops over the edge of huge fissures underneath the bridge. The bridge was massive, more sections being revealed through the dense fog the closer the group got. The crossing extended several dozen meters over the glowing chasm. It arched up and over to help dissipate heat from the underside. Even still, Pseudo could feel the soles of her feet grow uncomfortably warm as the treads of her boots softened. Bubbling caverns below spewed up the boiling water in slag and great gushes. Etta could hear it spray the underside of the bridge with a sizzle.
What's to stop it melting the bridge trellises?
Matthias paused, tapping a pauldron plate and saying over the geyser noise.
Thermal insulation tiles on the undergirding and carbon fiber supports. Gotta make multi-use material standard issue.
Lightning split the sky as the charged ions from combusting masses clashed with the ionosphere. They were halfway over, and the gaping maw was at its widest. It offered a clear view into the hellish depths below for Etta and Pseudo, their curiosity overwhelming their senses. They peered over the side through the braided steel cables at the pits below. Roiling pitch and debris flow spilled from every open vein, and random fumaroles squeezed superheated jets of water at high velocity in a never-ending cycle of pyroclastic activity. The tear in the Earth's flesh seemed almost bottomless, layered shelves of rock cliffs jutting from the sides of the crack, with magma falls cascading further down. As Etta and Pseudo looked fixedly at the sprawling chasm below, they felt tremors reverberate through the bridge tiles underfoot. It was subtle at first, gently swaying the support cables side to side. Then it quickly grew in intensity and frequency, like the footsteps of some great beast stomping its way across the bridge. The women stepped back from the edge and looked around to see Matthias missing, smoke and dust whipping around the empty space where he once was. Etta drew her pistol and locked back the cock and frizzen. She aimed down the bridge, hoping she'd have time enough to react to whatever was coming through the smog. Instinctively, she moved to step in front of Pseudo again, but instead of making herself small and cowering behind the judge, Pseudo stood tall, right next to Etta. With each trembling step, Etta could begin to hear mechanical whirring sounds and actuators firing through the smog. Her pistol hand shook as she swung it to and fro to find a solid target to fire upon, but suddenly she saw two sets of silhouettes. The smaller one of Matthias coming through the haze seemed to be walking in stride with a 3-meter-tall mechanical monster, huge square shoulders and bipedal legs stomping right beside him. He didn't seem panicked, and he raised a hand to signify his arrival in peace, and she holstered her pistol as the giant frame of a Helvetic heavy-duty harness stomped into view and halted directly in front of them. The armored exoskeleton, though imposing, was a sight familiar to both Etta and Pseudo. Several of these heavy-duty harnesses had been contracted to patrol outside the lower eastern walls of Justicia and to monitor the city's sinkhole, the Crack. Matthias made no introductions, but explained this unit was on its way back to a charging kiosk after helping remove large rubble from a landslide that had affected several wagon trains up ahead. Everyone stood aside as the towering chassis gave a stiff salute and stomped on past. They finished traversing the rest of the bridge without incident, and even though Etta felt her oxygen was waning, it was just at that time that they were able to finish the last few kilometers to clamber over the loose gravel of the caldera's edge. They felt somewhat relieved that the stopgap of the Reaper's blow was retreating behind them, as the charred metal signage for Ropen's Custom Station appeared on the path. Other people were the other sign of life outside the decay that they had passed through, and it was a welcoming sight, to be sure. Days 19 to 20. Unwritten and unsung journeys, though they may be epic in scale, sometimes simply end. This was the case for Etta, Pseudo, and Matthias, as the Ropen's Custom Station came into view, its immense concrete barriers nestled between two mountainous ridges.
The edge of Ropen Customs. Nothing but spore fields and clan feuds from here to the Adriatic Basin.
The station operated as the last waypoint to excise custom tax and monitor the flow of goods between regions. Matthias' presence, once again, expedited the checkout process as they were ushered to the front of each line. There was enough space on Etta's travel document, crumpled and singed, for one final signatory, which Matthias Nilsson signed at the bottom. He passed it over to Etta.
"I suppose this is where we part ways,"
he said, a tinge of disappointment layered in his voice. Etta folded the document along its worn creases and tucked it carefully inside her travel bag.
"It feels soon, but I know it's not. Are you certain you have to depart now? You'd certainly use the company to Moreno."
Matthias scratched the stubble on his face and sighed.
"I would, but my new CO ordered a radio check-in at nightfall, and then, who knows, probably back to another outpost assignment in Borca."
Pseudo piped up with a recommendation.
"Don't let another Boren type make poor decisions for you. It's not beneficial for your long-term health."
"I'll try my grunt level best, but I think each one of us knows about the order of things. Shit rolls downhill."
"But bureaucracy rolls faster,"
Etta said wryly.
"Ain't that the truth. Still, you can head east due to Marino, and you'll be well signposted. But make no mistake, tried and true Helvetics draw their lines here. Any you meet in Marino have gone absent without leave."
AWOL. Pseudo was familiar with the term, as the cluster had kept tabs on possible informants outside the Helvetic ranks. It made sense to her now why a chronicler shutter could easily be installed in the tunnels below.
Deserters?
Matthias spat on the ground.
Those selfish defectors contain the worst aspects of Baron and then some. Reprobates that use stolen valor to sully the doctrine. Best keep to each other and seek an accord with the roaming Jahamadans. They're honorable enough and get treated well in this part of Pagari.
The realization of having to pay again for services struck Edda.
I don't have much to trade. Does the Draft still spend in this part of the world?
Well, if Lombardis are tossing out dinars like pebbles these days, I'd imagine you'd have to answer in kind with draft notes.
Makes sense to me. I just hope to find a Jahamadan guide with as good a head on their shoulders as you and Kiefer.
The feeling's mutual. We may have gotten off to a rocky start, but you've helped me turn a corner on patience, even when it was sorely lacking in Exiel and Mulhouse. Yes, even you, Pseudo-19.
Pseudo bristled.
Moreno is still 2 days' travel. I will begin sourcing a guide within our current resource budget. Goodbye, Sergeant Matthias Nielsen. This one appreciates your time and efforts.
A fresh swath of new arrivals cut through the trio, and Pseudo took this as her sign to exit, giving a small nod and turning on her heels to fall into the moving crowd. Edda watched her go, thinking to herself.
And I keep thinking I'd gotten through that shell.
She focused her attention back on Matthias.
Well, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. We're indebted to you.
Nonsense. Just tell one of your senators to make my next deployment the Justician Perimeter with a heavy-duty harness, and we'll call it even. I've always wanted to pilot one of those beauties.
He said playfully. His good spirits were juxtaposed to the bags under his eyes, facing down an unknown future with positivity. It was as refreshing to Edda as the oxygen in the acrid atmosphere of the Reaper's Blow.
If I can keep my own head screwed on straight, I might have some clout in the near future to make that happen, soldier. Deal,
she said, sticking out a hand for a departing shake. Matthias took it firmly, adding,
And be sure to plug her in at night, or else she gets irritable.
Edda shrugged with a smirk.
Time has proven that to be her natural disposition, I'm afraid. Farewell, and safe travels.
So long,
he said, his eyes meeting hers for a brief moment before he averted his gaze and departed. Edda quickly paced to catch up with Pseudo, but heard a final call from Sergeant Matthias Nielsen come from behind.
Next time you cross through hell, get some proper gear, you squib.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Echoes of Eschaton. The music for the show is provided by Tabletop Audio, original 10-minute ambience and musicscapes for your games and stories. I'd like to thank my voice cast, Lyric as Edda Youngbow, Muinmos as Pseudo-19, and Wingnut as Sergeant Matthias Nielsen. You can meet the voice cast and me on the Echoes of Eschaton Discord server. Discord is an online platform where you can share messages, voice and video chat, and post in our live community with listeners from around the world. You can find the link to join the Echoes of Eschaton Discord server in this episode's description, on my Twitter profile bio, or on the homepage of my website, echoesofeschaton.com. If you'd like to support the show, there are multiple ways to do so. You can share this post-apocalyptic fiction podcast with a friend, like and retweet show announcements on Twitter, or leave a rating and written review on your podcatcher of choice. I now have a Ko-fi donation page as well to sponsor cool projects for the Discord server members and to support the show. You can consider donating to my most recent goal via the Ko-fi website at ko-fi.com/echoes of Eschaton. Until next time, dear listeners.